Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest show on Earth!
And welcome back to the greatest show on Earth that is Talking Terror. And we're here. As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G. Welcome you back to this episode of the show, where tonight we're going to be talking about the Ghoul of Geek Keith's film pick of the week, Deathstalker 2 from 1987, directed by Jim Wynorski, who always loved the boobs, and we love him for it. But of course, as always, I'm joined by the not always punctual, but always great Ghoul of Geek Keith.
Eat my butt, okay? I got stuck doing my fucking taxes today, and now, you know, of course, like wonderful things always like to happen. My taxes all went fine, but I'm being held up right now because of my fucking ex-wife, which is a fucking nightmare and a half. So,
oh, goddamn.
It's a great time. It's good stuff. You know, I love it. Fan-fucking-tastic. I wish nothing but great fucking herpes and AIDS.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that you're here. Like, you know, it got down to the countdown. I was like, oh, shit. Okay.
Hope our ugly fat foot falls out.
Well, it's fine. You know, taxes and death are all that we have in life. So that's fine. But, yeah, you know, you're here. We're here. We're going to be talking
I'm
about
here.
Deathstalker 2
later. I'm fabulous.
So.
Get used to it. What's going on, everybody? Good evening and welcome to Talking Terror.
What's with the AIDS and the herpes?
We have to sit down and talk, but now is not the right time.
it's a long story that involves taxes and herpes and AIDS for the ghoul. But, you know, Demonic Dean, you are back once again for the show. You know, and I know we have horror news to talk about. We have some trailers that I want to talk about. Dean, I want to thank you. I don't know if I want to thank you, but one of those things where we were talking in the group chat about conspiracy theories, and you're currently reading some JFK conspiracy theory books, which I highly recommend because both of those books that you have are great. But it caused me once again to fall back down the Son of Sam conspiracy theory, fucking rabbit hole. I've been on it for a straight week, and I'm like, God damn, thanks, Dean. Because now, like, He didn't do all of them. He was only there for a couple of them. God damn, why is he in jail for all of them? Why are the Carr brothers dead? Like, it's just, God damn it. I've been watching videos on YouTube all week. I was like, here I am. So thank you, Dean, for that, because it's the one that I never wanted to go back down again. You know, but how are you enjoying those books about the JFK conspiracy theories?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
The JFK conspiracy theory books that you're currently reading, have you gotten into them? Like, what are you thinking about it?
Oh, yeah, no, I have just a very short amount of time left in the Trail of the Assassins book from Jim Garrison. And then when I finish that one, I'll get into the other one. I had to put it down for a little bit, but I'll be, I'm sure, wrapping up the Trail of Assassins book this weekend.
So are you enjoying it? Or are you finding out any new information that's like, wow, shit?
Oh, there's plenty of information here that I had not been aware of prior. So, you know, I've really been enjoying the read. Not the Trail of the Assassins book, but the other book that I've had for quite some time now. I just hadn't had a chance to read it yet. so anyway... I look forward to finishing this one and then getting into that other one, which is, you know, it's a hefty, big one.
Yeah, that's a big tome. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts about that as well, because I shared in the group chat The Ultimate Evil from Maury Terry about the Sons of Sam. That's one that I actually cracked back open after you were talking about JFK and, again, went back down the rabbit hole of all the YouTube videos about how David Berkowitz wasn't the only killer in the summer of 76 and 77. But I was like, great, here I am again. This poor guy is rotting in jail because his conspirators are dead. So it stinks. But so before we get into horror news, I did share two trailers with you folks, Late Night with the Devil and The Strangers Chapter 1. Did you guys have a chance to watch them?
I did indeed.
I did.
A very
indeed.
Fine Talking Terror employee.
I'm a very fine Talking Terror employee.
Oh,
yeah, you both are.
Fruit.
We're all employees.
He didn't watch shit.
He did. I believe he did. I want to believe in the dean. I believe he did. But yeah, I dropped those two because the ghoul and I last week covered a lot of trailers for horror news because Dean was doing basketball. How did that go, by the way?
We had two games and we split them 1-1.
Not bad. So, you know, but it's now over. I think you said that the season is now officially in the books.
The season is now over.
So.
The basketball season.
Excellent. Okay. So two trailers
well,
I want to talk about.
Before the trailers, though, I do have a very important question about last week's show.
Sure, go ahead.
It's just a comparison question to the show that came the week before. My question is, were you able to make it all the way to the sign-offs and actually say goodbye?
I was. I was. And I told the ghoul last week on the show, because you weren't on the show last week because of basketball, but I had taken an entire edible during the show because it helps me sleep. It helps my feet because I have neuropathy. I did not realize how strong one full edible would be. I just figured, you know what, I'm a big guy. I could take it. I downed the entire thing, and then slowly throughout the last part of the show, I slipped away from life, and I had no idea where I was anymore. I was scared. I was desperately clinging on to anything that would make sense. And you know what? I made it somewhat through. But last week's episode, whole thing.
You,
I took a half.
You didn't make
I was
it
good.
Shit. Your ass melted on the air, bro.
Yeah.
You gotta learn to time that shit out, man.
Slow the fuck down. You fucking your thoughts were gone. You were cutting shit off.
Yeah.
You didn't even sign off. Okay, at all.
No,
you just cut the fucking episode off.
Yep. I was like, we're talking about None of the Comet next week. Good night. And I fucking was out. I needed to get back to reality. I was like, I don't know where I am anymore. You know, after I shut the episode, I was like, all right, I need to go to bed. I need to fucking do something. I was in fucking just zombie land at that point because I was like, yep, can't do that again. So, well, last week's episode made it through the entire thing. No problems.
You just have to, you have to time it right. You have to time it right. That's the important part.
That's the whole thing, man. And that's what I was telling the ghoul. I have to know if the dosage is right. I know when to take it and just get through it. But, yeah, I kind of threw caution to the wind.
That's the whole thing.
And said,
see, the king was thinking like he's a drinker. You know what I mean? He was thinking, hey, I'm a big back. I can eat a whole edible.
Yeah.
And because of my size, it ain't going to affect me, you know, in any, like, major way. It's just going to, like, you know, just hit me a little bit. And that shit don't work that way, man, at all.
Nope.
It does not. That shit hits, and it hits hard when it does, man, especially when it goes wrong.
Look, the ghoul and I, we've both been there many times. We know how it goes.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
No, I appreciate that too.
I one time
was,
ate too,
there was
too
a
much
party
edible.
That the team
yeah,
had
man, one. I threw a big party at my house, and I spent the entire fucking party hiding in my bedroom in the fucking fetal position. No joke.
I told the story last fucking week, man. You know, it was I took a piece of cookie that, like, this is when I was like eating those gummies I was getting on like a regular basis, hitting up shows all the time, and I'm eating, you know, multiple gummies while at the show, and I'm like, oh. I'm old hat at this by now, you know. 500 milligram cookie. Okay, I'm not dumb. I'm not going to eat half the cookie. I'm not going to eat a quarter of the cookie. I'm going to eat a tiny sliver of the cookie. Now, mind you, the name of the cookie is Trips Ahoy. Okay, so Trips Ahoy, it certainly was. Because I ate a fucking sliver that might have been like the size of like the from like my second pinky knuckle to the tip of my pinky. And yeah, it was fucking Trips Ahoy, all right. As like I sat there playing my video game, and I'm going, okay, if this stays like this, I'll be okay. And then promptly said, nope, and just turned the fucking system off, turned the TV off, stood up, and walked off to the bedroom without saying a word to anybody else, and climbed under the covers, and then spent the next 6 hours praying that I was not dying.
Yep. That's the way it goes.
You don't realize how hard it hits. It sucks, you know. But, you know, like I said last week with the ghoul, like I learned it. I was like, you know what? Just going to do half, you know, towards the end of the show. Not going to do during it. I was like, it's going to be fine. And last week went off without a hitch. But, yeah,
yes,
you know, learned my lesson.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, you know, because that episode, I was just like, I'm just going to rush through it, man. I was like, I'm just going to go through it. And we're just going to talk about this fucking movie. And then all of a sudden, I was like, I don't know where I am anymore. And I was like, I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am. But I'm in fucking
space. We
thought
the same
space.
Thing. We were like, where's the king?
Yeah, it was bad. But you know what? We're not repeating that. We're on a new
where did he
thing,
go?
But...
King, come
yeah,
back.
Yeah, I re-listened to that episode before the show. And I was like, yep, that's where I went wrong. Because I could hear it in my voice as soon as it happened. I was like, that's where I went wrong. That's what happened. I was like, yeah, we're talking about Night of the Comet. And the ghoul's like, hell yeah, fucking stash, thrill me. I'm like, that's not it. I don't care, fucking.
was probably not helping you either, you know what I mean? Because in your head, you're probably thinking, like, am I fucked up? Am I hearing them right?
Yeah. I was like, were you talking about Night of the Creeds? Like, no, I said Night of the Comet. And then, you know, I hear the dean go, oh, hell yeah, I haven't seen Night of the Comet in a while. I was like, okay, yeah, we'll talk about Night of the Comet next week. I was like, what the fuck pick did I just make? I was like, God damn it. I was like, all right, I got to go to bed. I just had to crawl in the bed and just forget about this. But so, yeah, that was a lot of fun. But moving forward from that, two trailers, Late Night with the Devil, The Strangers Chapter 1, because there's going to be a trilogy of The Strangers movies. I want to talk about Late Night with the Devil first, because the trailer came out, and I wanted to talk about it last week with the ghoul, but he had so many good fucking trailers, I'm like, you know, it could wait. But that being said, I watched Late Night with the Devil. I love David Desmashian. Ever since I saw him as Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad, and then Last Voyages of Demeter, rather, I adore him as an actor, and to see this kind of being described as a broadcast from 1977, Halloween, it's an exorcism taking place on TV. It brought back Ghostwatch vibes. I don't know if you've ever seen Ghostwatch, guys, from 1992, which was an
Ghost
England production. Ghostwatch?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was basically being kind of described as like a live haunted house investigation that was going to be on the BBC, and they put it on TV, and it caused a lot of fucking controversy because people thought it was real. And it wasn't. It was obviously staged. So I kind of feel like that with Late Night with the Devil. But what did you guys think about Late Night with the Devil?
What do you think, Dean?
I you know, I have seen some stuff about this one previously that mm-hmm. you know, has got me interested. And, you know, I was into the trailer. And, like, this is one that's been on my list that I'm looking forward to seeing when it comes out. So I've been kind of, you know, not super closely following along with the path to the screen, but I've been keeping my eye on it, and, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
So you didn't watch the trailer?
What are you fucking talking about? Of course I did. The fucking look of late 70s fucking TV looks fucking awesome. The costume design looks fucking awesome. And that whole, like, the voice of the narrator on the trailer had that perfect kind of 70s
oh, hell yeah.
non-mainstream yep. movie trailer voice. Like, it was a fucking good trailer. It's a fucking trailer. Like, what do you want me to say about it?
Okay, well, no, there you go. Well, the way you said it, you were just so fucking, like so blatantly, like, not bringing
you know, it was
trailer
a trailer.
Itself.
I didn't
want to
give too much away. I didn't want to fucking spoil it for anybody. I didn't want to spoil anything I saw in the trailer for anyone.
He goes, Dean, what did you think of the trailer? And then you probably went on about all the things you've read about the movie in the last couple of fucking weeks. We didn't ask you to do a news segment on the fucking movie. He asked you what you thought about the trailer of the film. So thank you. Yes, yes, indeed. I agree with you that the whole entire idea of making that film, you know, at least from the trailer, making it look like an old 70s-style broadcast, I agree with you, King, that, you know, that Dalmassian is one of those, or however you say his last name, he's one of those, like,
yeah,
gem actors that, like, pops up in things, and you're always like, hey, I'm glad I'm seeing him right now, because he just brings something, you know, even if it's not necessarily star power, he brings something. He brings your attention to him whenever he's in something. I'm hoping that he will be able to carry this, so they say. But yeah, it looks like an interesting movie, and I'm looking forward to this one greatly. It's only a week and a half away, March 22nd. So I will be seeing it in theaters for sure.
Yeah,
I can't fucking wait.
You know, yeah, this is one that I might make my my usual solo trip to the theater. I hope they get it right down the street. Did you guys know that William Atherton is one of the cameramen in the film?
Oh, God damn it. Spoilers.
That fucking spoiler.
Spoilers,
bro.
Man. I didn't know that. God damn it.
I didn't even know. Is he a dick in it?
No, he has no dick.
This man has
no
dick.
Does he have no dick? Sorry, does he have no dick in it? Is he a cameraman
he has
without
no
a dick?
Dick? Well, that's what I heard. Because that comes out the same weekend as Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So that's going to be a weird one for me, so I'm going to go see both. I've got to go see Ghostbusters, especially because the theaters near me are actually coming out with the popcorn buckets for Slimer and for Ecto-1. Like, these theaters around me now, like these independent theaters, are actually getting them. I'm like, oh, shit, okay. Got to pick them up.
I went and I saw Dune Part 2. This past week, finally. It was great. You know, definitely did not let down in any way at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they too at the AMC, you know, had the special.
Did you get
edition
the flashlight
popcorn
bucket?
No, I did not get the. I was tempted. I really was. Like, I went there, and there were plenty of them available at the time. It was an early showing on Thursday. I went to like a 3 o'clock showing, I actually had gotten off work early and was like, you know what, I'm gonna go fucking see this shit, and. There was a couple in front of me, a dude and his chick, and they're both buying the popcorn bucket. And, you know, it's just it's a hard sell at fucking $26 or $25.99. So $26.
$25.99. Holy shit.
$25.99. And, you know, like I'm looking at it. And
Hard
even
pass.
From just like the standpoint of reaching in to get my popcorn, it's like, I don't know. It reminded me of, like, when you were a kid, right? And you remember, like, the walk-through fun houses you went to? Like, whenever you went to, like, the carnivals that they would have at Freehold. Or even, like, I guess, like, maybe the Monmouth County Fair and shit like that. Like, they always had, like, a haunted house that you could, like, actually walk through, you know, like a fun house or whatever. And it had, they always had the area that you'd walk through. It was, like, a little hallway.
Fun house.
And there were, like, a fun house. There were tentacles, like, along the floor, you know, and you'd feel them, like, breezing up against your fucking ankles or whatever. That's what it kind of, like, looked like. And, like, the whole is not, like, it's not a small diameter, but it isn't also as wide as a standard popcorn box. So, like, you got to kind of, you're going to squeeze your hand in. You're going to crush up your popcorn when you're reaching in to get it. And the fucking thing's going to make a mess with all of the butter. So I'm like, man, I just can't. And like you said, it looks like a fleshlight. There's no way I wouldn't purchase this thing and then at some point or another try to stick my dick in it. So, like, I'm not doing that, bro. Like, I have to have standards.
You do?
Standards.
You? You fucking kidding me?
Listen, man, you know, like this shit I did in Asbury Park in the 90s that I never ever want to talk about.
You're the only one that ever brings it up on the show.
I know, I hear you. But I'm just saying, you know, like this stuff, like, you know, that I need to at least at some point now in my life as an older gentleman say, hey, you know what, like I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to stick my dick in this popcorn bucket. I've grown as a person.
See?
What happens in Asbury Park stays in Asbury Park.
Well, it doesn't, but yeah, sure. The legend of the ghoul is born.
What happens in Asbury Park follows you to the clinic.
Oh, it certainly does. I should stay with you forever. But okay, so the other show I wanted to talk about.
Rita Meissen's my friend.
The Strangers, Chapter 1. There's a trilogy of the Strangers movies coming out. The first one comes out in May, so they released a trailer for it, and it came out. And I know that Madeline Petsch, who played Cheryl Blossom in Riverdale, is in it. You know, and I watched the trailer, and I was just kind of not really excited for it because it just seems like they're just remaking the first Strangers movie with Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman, where it's, you know, you got the strangers, they're coming into this house, they're attacking this couple, you know, why are you here? And when they said that line at the end of the trailer, why are you here? Well, because you were here. But no, see, the strangers had that line, because you were home. I think that's a lot better of a line than because you're here. Like, I wasn't impressed with it because the first Strangers movie fucking terrified me when I saw it. I think back in 2008, because it's people invading a home and there's no reason for them to do it. Just they're there. So to see the tagline of this is how the strangers got started, it's like, well, no, they got started back in 2008 because at the end of that movie, the one girl says to the killer, well, it'll be easier the next time we do it. So I'm not really sure how excited I'm going to be for this one, but I'm still going to see it. But I just kind of fell flat with it. But what did you guys think, Ghoul, Dean?
I mean, you know, you know me with this kind of stuff. You know, I'm not a fan. Like, it's funny. There's actually, like, there's two of these movies coming out soon. There's this one,
yeah,
and then there
yeah.
is the Quiet Place prequel coming out. Now, it's funny,
okay.
but out of the two films, I want to see the Quiet Place movie, whereas this one, I really don't have any desire to see it. This is the kind
mm-hmm.
of movie that I don't need a prequel for, because part of, like, at least with the Quiet Place, right, we're talking about, like, an alien invasion that's going to completely change the entire existence of how people live in the world that we know today.
Right.
So seeing how that started is kind of interesting to me. In the
mm-hmm.
case of The Strangers, we're looking at a home invasion film in which we're seeing the first home invasion that these perpetrators committed. So now if I'm not watching this movie to cheer for the two people getting attacked in their home, then I'm there for what? To watch the three perpetrators that I know are going to survive by the end of the movie because they're going to make it to the next one. You know, so, or they're going to pull a twist and kill one of them, but there's another person that's going to join them. You know what I mean? Like something silly like that, just to make it like a little bit different. But it's almost like your feelings about the Leatherface movie, you know? Like if I'm
yeah.
seeing this, I want to see a continuation of whatever these characters are going to do. That's why I like the sequel to The Strangers more than the first movie. I found the first
it's
movie
so much
to be very
better.
Dull.
Yeah.
You know, I like
yeah,
the second
it,
film. And looking at this
yes,
trailer,
yeah.
you know, I might have liked this movie had the other two films never came out. You know, like that's kind of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If this was the very first film, now I'm invested because I don't know where these characters are going to go. I don't know what villains are going to survive. I don't know if the good guys are going to prevail. Maybe they're going to die at the end. And, oh, what a bummer. But you know what? I do tend to like movies that have
that
kind of ending. But only when there's an actual, like an adventure to get to that ending. Here I'm not going to
get
that.
No, yeah. I completely agree. Like, because yeah, I wanted to ask you that with the first Strangers movie, were you on the side of Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman in that movie? Because I was. I wanted to see them live. I didn't want to see them die by these three killers. It was like one of the first times where I saw a movie where I'm like, I want these two to live. Like, I don't want to see the strangers kill them.
And see, I actually found them both so fucking annoying in that movie.
Well,
that, like, I was
yeah.
If you remember, we covered it, bro. And like, that was
we
the
did.
Thing. I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever wanted to watch two people fucking die as much as in that film because of how fucking they were like,
terrible.
It was torture to watch them.
It was, and that's why I love Strangers Prey at Night more than The Strangers, because with The Strangers Prey at Night, it made you kind of root for the killers. Like, you wanted to see the killers take out this family, especially the scene in the car when the father gets killed, and the baghead killer plays Kim Wilde's Cambodia, and he turns it up, and he's like, why are you doing this? Please don't do this. You could stop, and he just fucking stabs the shit out of him, and then he just leaves. Like, you root for the killers in that one. So seeing Strangers Chapter 1, it's like, well, you're just redoing the first one. And are you going to see the strangers live and they kill these two? Probably. You know, it's probably going to, like, they even have the two Jehovah's Witnesses kids show up in the trailer like they did in the first Strangers movie when they showed up at the end and they discover Liv Tyler's body. It's like, well, just seems like you're just doing what you did before. So that's why I was kind of like, fine. You know, I think the marketing campaign is better than the actual movie because they're showing up everywhere in random places in random cities and just kind of staring at people wearing their masks. And just like the Smile campaign. I was like,
I was gonna say,
that's
just
what
like
you need
smile
to do.
Stuff. What did you think about it, Ian?
I thought it was a lovely trailer. I remember seeing the original Strangers movie, and I remember reading about this one, and, you know, it's a nice trailer.
It's not bad. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with
not,
you.
I'm totally joking. I was just fucking saying the same shit I said about the previous movie. But, yeah, look, I hear what you're saying. Like, it looks
how
like it has that fucking Strangers creepiness, you know. I also was not a huge fan of the first Strangers movie. There was a sequel to that one, right? I don't think I saw that.
Pray at night.
Yeah, that's right. Pray at Night. You know, I'm not super excited from the trailer. You know, the whole realm of the strangers is, like I said, I was not a big fan of the first movie and didn't see the second one, and don't feel like any kind of connection to it to like see the beginning. Or I'm kind of surprised given how some of the multi-episodic horror movies that have come out and not done well, I'm surprised that they announced like the three movies from the get-go. I would imagine, especially based on the failure of The Exorcist, that you know, studios would like start with one and see how it goes. But I guess if you start with one and it's a huge hit, then to get the second one into place, everyone is going to cost more money to do another one. So I could see both sides, but I just feel that there's a lot of risk involved. And like, I know that the first Strangers, and I could be totally wrong here, I'm going strictly on memory, and that movie's been out for a very long time. I don't recall the original Strangers being like a big box office hit. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I just feel like, yeah, sure, now that this time has passed, there's a little bit of name cachet behind it, like in a kind of, you know, small franchise-y kind of way. But when I saw that this was like an automatic three-picture go with Renny Harlin, I was kind of surprised about that.
No, I completely agree with you right there, Dean, because I was fucking shocked when they announced that they were going to do a three-movie Strangers, you know, kind of episodic journey, like you had said. And I was like, okay, I mean, you know, Strangers didn't do that great in theaters. It was okay, but Prey at Night got a limited theater release, and it also did okay. But then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you know what, let's do three fucking more, and let's do a trilogy, and we're going to have Renny Harlin involved. You know, but at the same time, compared to The Exorcist Believer, you know, Strangers Prey at Night didn't leave a bad taste in my mouth. I was like, you know what, the fucking movie was good. You know, it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of cool gore. The characters were good. You know, Christina Hendricks always happy to see her in a movie. But it just, it didn't hit me like The Exorcist Believer did, where I'm like, there's nothing left to this. We have two more? Come on. You know, I think we all walked out of that experience going, I can't believe there's going to be two more of these fucking things. And as we have seen with David Gordon Green backing out of the next one and the studios kind of scrambling, it's like, yeah, they kind of get that we're not happy. They're going to have to really kind of figure out what to do next with the other two movies, if they even get released. Because as we've seen, a lot of these movies, you know, they get filmed and they just kind of get scrapped. Where it's like, hey, we'll just make it a tax write-off. We're never going to release it, but we did it.
Facts. Facts.
It's just true. You know, a lot of these movies get made. You know, we talked about Batgirl a while ago. You know, that movie got just completely shelved because it was a tax write-off. So it's, you know, one of those things where you just know where they're going to go with it.
You also got to realize that, you know, sometimes these things are also a loss, you know, and that's part of the problem too. So, you know, necessarily releasing something that they know is pretty much a fucking guaranteed flop when they're trying to reset the entire DC universe anyway, you know, is probably not something that they really want to do, you know.
No, yeah, I agree with that. But, all right, Dean, so moving away from the trailers that we have to talk about tonight, it's horror news time. What are we talking about tonight?
I will tell you what we are talking about tonight. Because there are many items here.
Many. Let's go.
Many. And
first
items.
Off, items. It's an item.
Many.
There we go.
Two episodes are down for The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Your show.
The long-awaited and long-anticipated return of Andrew Lincoln to The Walking Dead universe. And I am all caught up and up to date, but I'm not talking about this to just share my own personal feelings. That's not what this is about, because this is not what we do in this portion of the program. AMC, though, is proud to announce that the first episode of The Ones We Live, while not to the amount of viewers that The Walking Dead had each episode in its heyday when they were bringing in around 16 million people per episode, they did say that this was the largest viewership for any new show that they have had in 6 years. You know, bringing back some audience to AMC and a little additional audience to The Walking Dead universe with bigger viewership than both of the previous spinoffs. I have watched both episodes. I'm into it. I'm curious to see, you know, where things go. As I've said before, what some of the things I hope are. And, you know, then there's, you know, the way things seem to be setting up. I don't want to comment too much on it. I don't know. I know the Ghoul saw the first episode. I don't know if he watched the second one yet.
I am caught. I've watched both episodes. I couldn't wait to watch the other day. You know what?
All right.
Ghoul is ready.
I have to say, I really enjoy having Rick back. It is nice to see Andrew Lincoln on screen. He is who you want to fucking watch when you're watching The Walking Dead. You know,
he's this part of the fucking show, man. That's it. That's what it comes down to. He's always been
about it, you know.
He's been the center since the beginning, and I feel that the only time the show, since he's been gone, the only time the show has come close to compelling is when Jeffrey Dean Morgan was on the screen.
Yes, but that's also for different reasons, because Negan is a different type of magnetism, you know, and it was,
of course,
and it was a magnetism that I did not find to be as fun when it came down to the Maggie Negan show. I mean, we still haven't finished that season, But I was not finding myself as drawn to that as I was when watching him within the actual setting with those people that he had done
yeah.
so much harm to.
So I,
you know?
Okay, so I'll make one comment on that, because again, this isn't the Walking Dead podcast, but and the king has no idea what we're talking about. But
we're a wrestling
podcast. I'd be curious what you're saying, and I agree. Like, Negan has never been like parallel to Rick. Like, Rick has always been numero uno. What I meant was that when Rick is gone, like when it was Negan time, was when the show was at its best. Now, as far as the spinoff with Maggie, I don't know. There were 6 episodes, and I don't know how many of them you watched. But by the end
we
of it,
you might be on four, maybe
all right,
five.
So,
like,
so
we're
with,
close to the
with,
end of it.
Right. So I found that with the groundwork that they're laying there, especially because there's going to be more of it, I thought the groundwork that was laying there when it was all said and done was kind of cool. You know, did I think it was the greatest thing ever? No. But, like, let's put it this way. I was stoked to watch that one and couldn't wait for it to come on and watched it each week when the episodes came. And alternatively, I haven't even watched the Daryl Dixon one yet. So, I mean, I'm sure that I will. But you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't chomping at the bit to get to that one, but I was really looking forward to watching the Negan.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, see, we haven't seen anything of the Daryl Dixon show at all. And, you know, I'll almost argue the point to a degree. Like, yes, I agree with you that when, you know, with Rick gone, you know, Negan is obviously, you know, the better part of the newer version of The Walking Dead that follows Rick's departure. But I would even say and go this much further and say he kind of is, to me, in that show, parallel to Rick. You know, like, I'm invested in what Negan's doing the same
mm-hmm.
way
Absolutely.
I'm invested in what Rick is doing when he was on the regular Walking Dead show. I just didn't feel that with the spinoff show. And I think that's just because the setting seems so much more absurd. The things going on with that series seem so much more absurd. Like, if I watch the original Walking Dead, like, I'm thinking, okay, this reminds me of, like, movies like, you know, fucking Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, shit like that. I watch, I don't even remember the name of that series. It felt like a comic book. Now, I know this all came off of a comic series, but the original show to me didn't feel like so much like a comic book. That series does. You got people fucking, you know, ziplining across an abandoned New York City. It was just a little campier than I was kind of expecting or hoping, I guess. And yeah, Daryl Dixon, we'll maybe get to it when we get to it. But yeah, Rick's show, it's been a ride already. You know, 2 episodes in, you get caught up on your 2 main characters. You get an idea of where their world is. In true Walking Dead fashion, you get invested in people, and they're dead. And that is fucking fun. That is, that's what the Walking
yeah,
Dead
is.
Yeah,
that's a good piece
is,
of it, for
know? Sure. And that's something that I think the main show was kind of, like, starting to, like, miss by the end of it. Like, I get it. People were invested 11 seasons in that series. Oh, I don't want to watch them die type of deal. But you know what? Yeah, I kind of do. You know, when I said that about the finale, I feel like more characters should have been dying at that point, not just the one particular one. You know, it's kind of like people felt about, like, well, not people, but how I forget who the creator was of, I want to say David Green, but I know it's not David Green. Whatever the guy is that made The Sopranos, you know? When he finally, like,
David
got around to admit,
David Chase.
When he finally got around to admitting that the end of The Sopranos is, in fact, Tony dying. Like, you know, like he said, like, he's like, what kind of morbid person? You've been following this character for however many seasons, and you want to see him die on a table in a restaurant with his family? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because how many people yep. did he order killed? You know what I mean? Like, in the end, it becomes fucking cyclical, you know? Like, that's just kind of how it all works out.
Live by the
speaking
gun.
Of, though, that table, that fucking table actually sold for
$89,000. $82,000.
Is that what it was, 82? Yep. I thought it was 89.
82 grand for the whole booth, the table, the jukebox thing.
It did?
Yes,
wow.
Indeed.
The little sign,
yeah,
the little sign on it that says
hurt.
Reserved for the Soprano family.
Yeah, Holston's was hurting for money, you know, for like some repairs and stuff that needed to be done to the place. So they auctioned it off, and good. I hope they get to use it. I hope it helps helps keep their doors open, you know?
Yeah, 82 grand.
That's insane. All right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
Quickly, we'll point out, since we have covered some of this on our show, but the A24 film from Ty West, Maxine, of course, with the triple X's.
Yeah.
The film mm-hmm. has an official release date now of July 5th this year. They're, you know, describing this one as just an old, good old-fashioned whodunit slasher. And the third film in the series coming July 5th again.
Yeah, I can't fucking wait. You know, it's being called a slasher, a giallo, set in 85 in Los Angeles with Maxine being there. But he also said that there might be more to the X series. You know, that, you know, maybe this isn't going to be the last one, that he might want to do another one. So
X going to give it to you.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm just such a huge fan of these movies. Pearl was an interesting kind of character study, whereas X was just straightforward slasher we talked about in the show. But yeah, I can't wait to see how this is going to wrap up and see if there is an opening for another one. It got me. So looking forward to seeing Maxine this July.
We will find out. Yes, we will.
All right. What's next? What are we talking about?
Yes. Yes, we will.
You know, obviously on our program here, we talk about horror movies every week, both of what we're being covered and other things going on within the world of horror. But I'm shocked. I feel like this can't be, but I was surprised to learn that it's been, has it really been 13 years since there's been a Final Destination movie?
Yeah. About right.
I feel like there's been more recent, like a more recent entry, but I guess I was wrong when I read that the Final Destination that Final Destination 6 is officially in production, and then reading that it's the first film in this franchise in 13 years. I was really surprised about that. I really thought that there was one
the bridge.
I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago.
No, the bridge was the
one,
last one. We've been talking about it, you know, and them looking to make another one for probably about the last 2 years, though. So
yeah, 5 was 2011, I want to say.
Yep. That makes sense.
I think 2011.
Oh, I just farted. So, sorry. What was it? What was that, 12 years ago? So
yeah,
five,
I was
going to
say 2011 was the last one I remember.
All right. Anyway, The next entry in Final Destination realm is in production, Final Destination 6. It's officially titled Final Destination Bloodlines.
Mm.
Cinematographer Christian Sebalt had shared some images on Instagram about the production. It's being prepped for a 2025 release to get it out in time for the 25th anniversary of the original film. This will be seeing, you know, a regular theatrical release as well as IMAX.
Okay. I mean, that shocks me even more. The first one was 25 fucking years ago. That just fucking makes me feel old. It was 25 years ago we got the first Final Destination movie. I don't know about Bloodline, you know, being the tag for that movie, because Pet Cemetery Bloodline was fucking terrible. Hopefully it'll be okay.
They love that fucking word.
Yeah, I don't know. Fine. I mean, the Bloodline WWE is a whole different thing. So, all the Bloodlines going on. The Rock's back, baby. I mean, yeah.
We started, like, one night we put on Pet Cemetery Bloodline and I forget what happened. I want to say we put it on. It was on for about 2 seconds, And we got into a me and my girl got into an argument, so we stopped it and we just never went back to it.
Well, you're saving yourselves because it's terrible. It's just from start to finish, that movie makes no fucking sense. You know, I know Stephen King was like, "Oh man, it's fucking great! Like it's telling the story of Judd Crandall, like I told in the books." But no, it's not worth it.
I like money when they pay me for things.
Yeah, if they're going to pay me to promote this movie, I fucking love it. But yeah, I mean, the lead actor that plays Judd Crandall has no fucking accent whatsoever. So it's fucking weird because he's just like, oh, what's going on over here? Like, I feel like there's something going on in the cemetery past the Mi'kmaq burial grounds. Like, no, you got to pull the Judd fucking Crandall, Fred Gwynn. I don't want to go down that road, Lois. Like, you know, none of that. I was like, where did he get it? Like, it's fucking terrible. Like, I sat through that entire movie with my arms folded like the ghoul does when he watches a movie that I pick for the show. And I was like, nope. This fucking movie sucks.
Oh, you make assumptions. I don't sit like that. I just start the movie like that.
And then slowly your arms unfold and you're like, oh, okay.
Sometimes.
Sometimes I make hits, sometimes I make misses. But, all right, so moving on from Final Destination Bloodlines. What else are we talking about, Dean?
What are we talking about, Dean?
The King loves George Romero. Favorites. We know this.
I do.
He's
my guy.
Talked about how George Romero is his guy. And we know that... Several years ago, author Daniel Kraus was chosen to finish an unfinished George Romero novel, The Living Dead, which was published in 2020.
Awful.
It has now been learned that while going through the George Romero archives in the University of Pittsburgh's Romero Archive Collection, Kraus has... actually unearthed another unfinished Romero novel called Pay the Piper, which he has been given permission to complete. He has actually finished the novel. It's coming out September 3rd. It's 328 pages long, and you can pre-order it right now for $18.99. And he discovered this other unfinished work back in 2020 when he was in the archives after publishing the completed version of The Living Dead. So if that is something that is of interest and enjoyment to you, there is more work of George Romero that you will get a chance to enjoy.
Yeah, I saw that, Dean. I put it on the Facebook page for Talking Terror. I'm not looking forward to it because... The Living Dead, I bought as soon as it came out. I was so fucking excited. I was like, this is George. You know, this is his words, and Daniel Kraus is going to complete it. It was 656 pages of fucking bullshit. Like, it was just annoying. It was long. It just had no really kind of connecting threads. It was just all over the place, and I was like, wow, this is it? I was like, it took me forever to get through that book. I wanted to, like, complete it real quick. So I was like, this is George, this is Daniel Kraus. But when I finished it, I was like, God, I never want to revisit this book again. I was like, it's terrible. Like, it didn't feel like George at all. It just felt like it was Daniel Kraus just kind of pulling together ideas that George might have had for The Living Dead. So when I saw that he's going to take on another novel, I was like, I'm good. I don't really need to read this one. You know, I have the hardback of Living Dead on my shelf, and I'm like, why are you not good? I was expecting so much more. Just, you know, George's voice wasn't in the book at all. Just didn't really feel like it was a George Romero book. None of the ideas that he had created throughout the Dead series were there. Because as you know, George is always about talking about current events and talking about what's going on. And this one was just kind of like, he wrote a couple pages. I'm going to finish it. And yeah, it was bad. I don't know if you guys have read it, but would not recommend you guys checking it out.
I did not. I've currently got like seven books that I'm reading all at the same time. And I'm not finishing any of them right now because I am just sucking balls on the
I'm the same thing. I just bought like a bunch of new books and I'm like, you know, I'm going to finish them. I'm going to read them. And I'm like, you know what? The Dean's on a rabbit hole with JFK. I'm going to read my Son of the Sand book again. I'm like, oh, damn it.
There you go.
I have so many other books. I just bought five more. I was like, you know, they're on my shelf ready to be read. Come on, King, read them. I'm like, nope, going to reread the Ultimate Evil by Lawrence Harry again because I'm in that rabbit hole. So, you know, and Dean, I don't know if you've read The Living Dead, but again, like I said, it's a slog. And he hasn't, folks, because he said so. Anyway,
yes.
Dean, what is next? What are we talking about?
There was once upon a time the Freddy's Nightmares television show.
Oh, love it.
And there an episode written by Geoff Turner with his partner Henry Quattro and David DeNoyer, sometime partner David DeNoyer. They wrote an episode called Night of the Living Tapes. For the, you know, Freddy Nightmares television show. And these guys have now written the unofficial companion to the Freddy's Nightmare series. It's called Welcome to Prime Time, the unofficial Freddy's Nightmares companion. This book will be shipping on April 1st in partnership with Death Cult Press. Right now, there are three different packages that you can order. Each one comes with the book, and then there's some with, like, stickers and buttons and other nonsense and so on and so forth. The three different packages start at $20 and then $30 and then $40. So if you feel like you need the unofficial companion to the Freddy's Nightmares television show, then Welcome to Prime Time should be on your upcoming wish list.
Oh man, it definitely is, because I love that series. You know, two seasons is great. A lot of good episodes. A lot of good actors got their start with Freddy's Nightmares. Like Brad Pitt was in one of the episodes. Mariska Hargitay, who's now doing 55 fucking seasons of SVU, Law and Order. Damn, I'm going to have to look that up.
What's that? Never heard
it's
of that.
It's a long-running TV series. No, have you not? Oh, my God. We actually met one of the guys from that show, Ice-T, at the Blood and Babes convention in Staten Island.
Long Island. Long Island.
I'm sorry. Yeah, not Staten.
Yes.
Long. But, man, what a fucking convention that was.
We found Ice-T in Long Island.
It was amazing, and I remember when we were going up there, we passed Yonkers, and I was like, that's where David Berkowitz lived. Bringing it all back. I was like, damn, you know, but what a fucking weird convention that was, man. One for the books. It was so fucking bizarre.
It wasn't even like 11 o'clock. We were fucking bombed.
We were fucking hammered at 10 o'clock in the morning, drinking beers out of the back of the car.
We fucking got there early, and nothing was open. Nothing was set up, like, for the actual, like, event. Because, like, you know, we left early assuming we were going to run into, like, New York-level traffic. And then there was none. Like,
none.
At all. Like, flew right the fuck in. So then it was like, oh, great, what are we going to do? So, like, we went over to, like, the local, like, CVS or the Walgreens or whatever. I think we were just looking to go get, like regular, like, drinks or whatever it was. And, like, maybe something to snack on. And I think you were the one that was like, dude, they sell fucking booze. Like,
I was fucking amazed. I was like, they have beer at CVS. And you're like, yeah, dude, it's fucking New York. I'm like, I fucking love this fucking state. I love everything about New York. And they're like, yeah, let's fucking go, man. And fucking sitting in the parking garage, fucking getting bombed, getting ready to go into the convention. And then fucking Bradley Crianzo shows up in his fucking 80s fucking car.
It was fucking Firebird, bro. Fucking hype, man. Looking like a fucking, like he's an extra in fucking Miami Vice.
Yeah. Like it's fucking just another day for him. I'm like, God damn, this fucking guy. You know, that whole fucking event.
Oh,
you know,
rad.
We met Caitlin O'Haney from 3 o'clock High, and he knows you're alone. And she was like, oh, that's great. I was like, why are you here, though? It's like a weird fucking titty convention, but there's iced tea, though. It was such a random, weird fucking event in, like, a mall. I'll never forget that event. Never again. Even Todd Cerucci, who's been on our show before, was like, I don't get it either, man.
The hard nerd.
Yeah, the hard nerd himself. Such a weird one. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about tonight?
Lionsgate made something like $3 billion with its Twilight series. And since, of course, you know, everyone wants to maximize every last penny that they can off of everything, Lionsgate is currently developing and shopping around an animated Twilight television series.
What?
Thought about perhaps, you know, remaking or something, but they've decided the best way is just to retell the story in animated fashion, and that is what they're currently okay. shopping around to interested parties.
Oh, man. An animated Twilight series. Okay, sure. Why not? We covered Eclipse on the show, so that shows you.
We did.
In the series.
What a night.
That was something. You know, showing to the ghoul who likes to just dive us into the fucking series, three movies in. Ah, man. Cares about New Dawn and fucking those other movies. Just go in the third one. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there's fan base still for Twilight. I feel like it kind of died off. I feel like that kind of waned. You know, people moved on. I don't know what the new trend is, but
who knows, man.
Something. I don't know. I guess Dune 2, you know, Ghoul, I guess that's a new trend for people. Teens, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, Dune 2 was you know, it's a weird one. I am not surprised at the popularity of Dune 2 at all. The first film ended up being sneaky popular. It was one of those where I guess, you know, they were interested in the cast. You know, so being that it had so many faces of people that they knew, you know, young up-and-coming stars like, you know, Timothée Chalamet and stuff like that, that drew audience to it. And that was one of those films where it was kind of, they did the whole theater and streaming release at the same time. Now I went to go see it in the theater because, like, I'm, you know me, A, I love the fucking movie theater experience, but B, you know, for me, that's the kind of film that you go to the movie theater to see. It's, you know, world building. You're entering an entirely different universe. I don't want to see that even on my, you know, screen, my big screen TV in my house. I want to see that in a larger than life format to, like, really suck me into that world. But I guess with the at home, like, it kind of drew a bigger fan base than I was expecting. Like, I expected there to be people. I didn't expect it to be huge. Like, even my showing at 3 o'clock it was a very well packed theater. And like, I see all the theaters, you know, in my area, all the AMCs, they have many, many, many show times for this film. And, like, you know, just on a whim, like, I'll poke in just to see, like, how many seats are being sold. And a lot of these theaters are filling up, like, you know, so that's pretty impressive. My buddy Louie, he works for one of the magnet schools in Middlesex County. He was the cinematographer on the Thomas Ryan movie that I did. He thinks that the movie's going to break a billion. I think that's a rough call in in today's market. You know, I think Barbie pulled that off because it had an installed fan base already. I don't think Dune 2 is necessarily going to get there, but you never know. It might. I was impressed with it. I liked it. You know, my biggest gripe with the first movie was just that it felt like half a film, because that's what it was, you know. And going into it, there was no information that it was only going to be half a movie. You know, they kind of hit you with that, because there was no confirmation from the studio that they were going to allow them to make the sequel. So that was ballsy on their part, because realistically, if that movie didn't end up being successful, we would have never gotten the second half of this film. That really would have fucking sucked, because again, that's similar to the whole Terminator Genesis thing, in which, you know, you have a trilogy of films that you're setting up, you're putting pieces into place to tell a deeper and bigger story, and yet that
deeper
story is now never going to get
deeper
completed. And that really blows. That's very deep, like your fucking rectal canal. I was thrilled with it. I thought it was great. I didn't go see it in the IMAX. I know eventually Sammy the Little Monster wants to. She hasn't watched the first one yet. She's all goo goo gaga for fucking Timothy Chalamet like all these other girls are. I don't know. The kid's got the same fucking. He's about as fucking wide as my cock. So like looking at him, it's like looking at a fucking. Yeah, it's like looking at my penis, bro, and I'm just like, why has my penis got hair on it? But I guess that's the look they're all going for right now, this fucking dour-faced emo fucking kid. But yeah, so I know this is leading into a third film, though. That is the idea. But the second movie did have a definitive ending, so at least it's not a matter of like, hey, you know, if we don't get this next movie, we're not going to see where this goes. This movie finished. There is somewhere else to go with it, though.
All right, excellent. So we'll see what happens if there's a third entry in the Dune series. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about tonight?
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
2026. See the world have the opportunity to play Paranormal Activity, the video game.
No shit.
From Paramount Game Studios and Dread XP. They will be looking to reignite the suspense that comes from the found footage style of movie making into the smaller screens of your video game consoles. So, 2026, you can look forward to Paranormal Activity, the video game, where another 2 years will have passed since anyone has given a crap about Paranormal Activity.
Well, Paranormal Activity Next of Kin was pretty fucking good, man. Yeah, that was the last movie that came out from that series, and it completely fucking deviated from the storyline of Katie Featherston being possessed. It was taking place in an Amish community. Really fucking good. I mean, I have all of them on DVD. Surprise, I know. That was definitely a surprise, Next of Kin. But a video game? Sure, why not? I mean, they made a Saw video game, which made sense, but I guess Paranormal Activity, the video game, are just going to be going from room to room going, where's the ghost? We'll see what happens with that.
Oh, he's flicking my bean.
He does it better than you. Oh, mm-hmm. Damn. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about tonight?
Also, in the realm of Lionsgate, they are currently working on getting together remakes of both American Psycho and The Dead Zone. Lionsgate is currently looking for a writer to update American Psycho for a modern audience, as well as looking for a writer to bring an updated version of The Dead Zone, you know, and get two remakes going for these properties.
I mean, Dead Zone did have a TV series in USA with Anthony Michael Hall taking over the Crystal Walking.
Yes, it was the USA TV series.
Not a bad series. Not a bad series, you know, if I do say so. But American Psycho, it's not so much trying to find a replacement for Christian Bale, which I think you can do. I just kind of wish they would stick more with the book by David Easton Ellis, because that book gets truly fucking gruesome at some points that the movie never really did, because it's kind of insane what Patrick Bateman does to a lot of his victims, especially with the corpses. So I would love it if they kind of took more from the book and made it into a movie and kind of pushed the fucking envelope, because while that movie is great, don't get me wrong, the book is so much fucking better, because Patrick Bateman is a sick fucking bastard when it comes to his victims. And I would love to see that kind of come to fruition with a new movie, but, you know, we'll see. You know, just if you make a good movie, it doesn't matter who's in that character. But, you know, Christian Bale kind of made it his own, just like he did with Batman for the Nolan movies. But, you know, there's so much fucking twisted shit that happens in the book that I kind of want to see happen, like using a car battery on a girl's nipples and having the apartment smell like fucking shit, and Patrick doesn't seem to care. Like, I was like, that. Love to see that in a fucking movie. Get fucking dark with it, but probably never going to happen. You know, people only want to go so far, but yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever read American Psycho, the book, but highly recommend
it. I have not.
I have, it was a while ago. Are you sure you didn't, Dean? I thought you did. Because I thought I remember us
American
talking
Psycho?
About it.
No, I never read it.
You need to change that. I think you would fucking love it. Like, it's really fucking good, and definitely just takes things from the movie that never really happened. Like, the movie kind of played itself out, but the book goes so much further into how much of a psycho Patrick Bateman is. I think you would really enjoy it. You know, it's a different kind of feel. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about tonight?
The 1990s, has... you know, brought us the cinematic disaster of the Island of Dr. Moreau. It did not come out well and was a huge flop. And, apparently trying to right the wrongs, there is going to be a new reimagining of the Island of Dr. Moreau, and Anthony Hopkins has signed on to star in this adaptation.
Okay. I'm digging it.
Yes. It's not going to be – this is not just the – there's been several film adaptations of this story over the years. It had been a long time, but I don't remember the year of the one that came previous to the 90s one, but like, it's not like the one in the 90s was the first one.
Right.
So they're trying it again. We'll see what happens. It's going to be directed by Timothy Woodward Jr., who most recently directed Till Death Do Us Part, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, I mean, the movie itself, the one with Marlon Brando, is not very good, but the documentary that came out, Hearts of Darkness, all about Richard Stanley's kind of creation of the Island of Dr. Moreau, is fucking great. And then Richard Stanley came out of nowhere and fucking made that Nicolas Cage movie that came out a couple of years ago based on the H.P. Lovecraft Colors Out of Space, which is amazing. But Anthony Hopkins, I just kind of want to see back in movies. So I'm kind of glad to see that he's going to take on the role of Dr. Moreau, hopefully, and, you know, be back, because I'm a huge Anthony Hopkins fan. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that project. But all right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
I think the last thing that I have here on my list for this evening is that just a couple of months from now, May 3rd. We'll see the next edition in the John Carpenter Lost Themes Musical Collection Series. This will be John Carpenter's Lost Themes 4 with the simple title of Noir. So that, again, is coming up on May 3rd. Can be pre-ordered wherever you buy your music, or you can wait for streaming. But that's some pretty good shit from John Carpenter on the consistent, and you will now have the chance to check out the next edition in the Lost Themes series.
He just came out with a music video today for that one of the title tracks from Lost Themes 4. I put it on the Talking Terror Facebook page if you guys want to check it out. But yeah, he came out with a music video, him and his son Cody and his other collaborator. I know Fright Rags has a whole thing with that coming out, with the T-shirt and the record and everything like that. But just it's great to see John Carpenter not giving up. Like we talked about in the show, like he's kind of the last one. You know, we've lost so many great directors over the years, Wes Craven, George Romero, Tobe Hooper. So it's kind of like he's the last bastion of those great directors that we grew up watching. So to see him still creating and still making things, I fucking love it. I'm here for it. Like, never go, John. Just keep on living, man, because we need you. You know, you're the last one to kind of be around. But with that being said, we're going to transition over to the Ghoul Geek Keith with his film pick of the week, Deathstalker 2 from 1987, directed by Jim Wynorski. I love titties.
Cool.
Ghoul, why don't you go ahead and give us a synopsis of the movie, what you thought about it, and let's kick this discussion off.
All right. Deathstalker 2. So in this film, Conan meets a princess. They assemble a ragtag group of people. Listen, you know, Deathstalker 2. It's literally a fucking cornball guy running around in a fucking loincloth. You got a blonde, somewhat attractive chick who's playing two roles, showing her boobs. You know, we've got Matilda the Hun, you know, famous from fucking GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, mm-hmm. which I used to love watching. You know, she used to always come up against she always went up against Mount Fiji. She was one of, like, the big monstrous fucking women on that fucking show. So, like, I never forgot her. The second I fucking saw her in this movie, I was like, oh, no shit, look at that. You know, look, there's hot chicks, there's some boobs, but overall this movie is a comedy, you know. Now, I ended up picking this film, you know, because, A, when I said originally Deathstalker, you were immediately like, oh, I'm surprised you're not picking Deathstalker 2 because of blah, 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 blah. And then though, I looked at the cast list and I saw John Lazar. And, you know, that's fucking Z-Man. That is Z-Man from Beyond mm-hmm. the Valley of Dolls. So I was like, at the very least, even if this movie is fucking absolutely atrocious, he is going to at least bring some entertainment value to the film. This is a Roger Corman film filmed in fucking Argentina. It is exactly what I started it off as. It is a Conan fucking ripoff. That is what this is. They were trying to capitalize on the success of that film and try to kind of like make their own version of it. You know, I know that I said in our group chat, like, if you have a chance to breeze, like, I know you saw the first film, Dean, if you had a chance mm-hmm. to breeze through the first film, because after watching this and all this cornball fucking silly shit that I saw in this movie, I'm watching it going, you know, I just needed to see the first movie to see if this is what the first film was like. I know you say that this film is all titties. It's all titties. Bro, I dare you to go back and watch that first film. That first film has more nudity, more sex, more rape. It's all kinds of rape going on in the first film. I wish I picked the first film because it would have been a more interesting film to speak about than this one. It even has some fucking horror movie alumni in it with Richard Brooker, you know, famous as Friday the 13th Part 3's fucking Jason. You know, that movie was obviously trying to be a real film that would be comparable to Conan. the humor in that movie is all unintentional, which makes it more charming and more fun. Mm. This, the humor just falls flat for me. It's just, it's goofy. The fucking main character doesn't look like he belongs in this movie. He looks like he belongs as, you know, the charming neighbor in some fucking sitcom that's trying to get in the main character's daughter's pants. Like, that's who this guy is. You know, he's the goofy fucking handyman or something like that. I just can never take this fucking guy serious, like, at all. You know, did I have fun watching it? I mean, I love these kind of movies, so to a small extent, yes, I enjoyed the first movie more.
All right. So, Dean, what'd you think about The Stalker 2?
So, where to begin? Yesterday, the day before, whatever it was that I inquired into. But now it looks as though I've found a way. And I found a way to ask what the film was for tonight. And in our chat, I was told Deathstalker 2, with exactly what the ghoul just said about trying to get an opportunity to see some of Deathstalker. Well, I realized that both of these films are currently on Shudder. And decided to take some time yesterday, and I started with Deathstalker 1. And, you know, I got as far as I could before having to stop because I felt like I was watching the worst fucking movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Now, sure, there's plenty of violence, sure, silly violence, limbs being used as weapons kind of violence, but like fake-looking rubbery limbs. Sure, there's lots and lots and lots of tits and sex against the will of the women. You know, some might say misogynistic, some might say rape. I mean, like just at some points, like, oh, you're just going to fuck whoever you want, whether or not they want you to fuck them. Huh, Deathstalker?
I don't remember DMC. I love it.
I probably watched the first 45 minutes, and I was like, all right, like, gotta move on here. And then I started the second one, and if I thought that Deathstalker was the worst movie that I've ever seen, then Deathstalker 2 had eclipsed, had done the unthinkable. And look, I did some looking and some reading, and I realized that this was made like purposely tongue in cheek to kind of send up the sword and sorcery kind of films and everything. Like there were bits of humor here and there, but as a whole thing, you know. And look, I know that I pick some terrible shit for the show, and sometimes I do it on purpose, but. This was truly something. We'll talk about the scenes as we go along in our discussion, but man, I don't know if I'm surprised or not that I had never even heard of either of these films. Surely it was lovely to see John Lazar in a role other than Z-Man, but man, what a fucking set of movies these two are.
Yeah, they are something. You know? I mean, I've seen both of the movies, like we've talked about. I prefer Deathstalker 2 over Deathstalker, the first one, just because Deathstalker 2 knows exactly what it is, and it's just fucking stupid. It's just, you know, we're just going to be as funny as we can. We're going to show a bunch of tits. Jim Wynorski knows what he's doing, still working to this day, making movies. Just knows what you want to see. You know, and he shows it to you. That's why I always kind of appreciated Deathstalker 2 because it was always on HBO back in the day. It was always one of those late night movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have no recollection of that as someone who was glued to HBO around the clock as a kid.
Oh, yeah, it was a late night movie. It was like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, you know, I'm sitting in bed and I have my TV in my bedroom. Yeah, turning it on, there is Deathstalker 2. You know, Jim Wynorski, who previously directed Chopping Mall, which you talked about in the show, just
I love that movie.
To give you a Yeah, it's great. He directed it, and, you know, he does a lot of those Fed movies. Killbots. But it's just, it's a movie that you just turn your brain off to. Like, just, I'm not a big fan of sword and sorcery movies, not a fan of fantasy, but I always kind of had a soft spot for Death Soccer 2 just because it was just a quick fucking hour and 15 minute movie, knew what it was doing, and it just, it accomplished everything that you could possibly ask for as a young adult, as I was watching those movies. You got to see tits, you got to see some action, the weird Death Soccer character trying to be Kurt Russell at every fucking turn. You know, it was great. But the movie itself opens up on a dark and stormy night. We're inside a castle. Deathstalker and a woman are inside looking for something. Deathstalker gives her a kiss after confirming that's what he's looking for. Cue the lively pop music as he sends the woman away, and he goes on a search. He finds what he's looking for, a jewel in a small chest, just as a man rushes out of nowhere to attack him. More men join in this fight, but Deathstalker manages to escape to the outside. And once he escapes on horseback, we see Sultana show up, swearing revenge on Deathstalker. So after the credits, we see Evie has been captured by some guards. She's a seer, by the way. They're kicking her out of town because she's a beggar. Evie says that the king wanted her to show him the future, but the guards say that she needs to leave and orders by this king. Deathstalker, who doesn't mind seeing a woman get beaten if she deserves it, if she deserves it, he shows up to save Evie. So he takes down the guards and heads into the village. Inside a bar, Deathstalker desperately tries to be the best Kurt Russell that he can be, like I had said, attempting to get two girls into his bed when Evie comes in and says that she needs to talk to him. She needs his help, but he doesn't feel up to the task. More guards show up to take Evie out of the village, so Deathstalker fights them. During the brawl, Deathstalker and Evie escape out on horseback before they get one last good look at some titties, a Jim Wynorski trademark. He's just not afraid to show them shakers. Like, I was like, you know, thank you, Jim. As a young boy, I appreciate it. So Deathstalker rides away on horseback with Evie as they're chased by the guards. He manages to evade them momentarily, but they're once again chased. Once they finally lost the guards, Evie and Deathstalker seek refuge in a straw hut, while Evie makes them stew, which isn't good. Evie decides to tell him that she's a seer and will see into the future to make up for messing things up for him. She sees an adventure for him involving a princess that's calling to him for help. She's imprisoned by the evil Jarek, an evil sorcerer and warrior. He needs to go to the land of Jafir to find Jarek. He wants to know about the reward, and she says she'll tell him when she knows more. So the two are off to Jafir. So we cut up to a castle where Jarek is showing off his sword fighting skills while a woman looks on, who apparently is Evie. All right, so this woman that we see is the doppelganger of Evie, but she's evil and took the form of Evie because she was created by Jarek. So while the good Evie is considered a beggar, we have this evil Evie created by Jarek that is not. So, you know, not confident in this explanation, but we're going to keep on going.
Here's the thing. He cloned her to take over the throne because Evie's the queen. So he's installed this girl as his queen, because he can control her, essentially. The problem is she's tethered to the original source still. So if something is to happen to Evie while she's out and about, it's going to kill this woman, this imposter, which would then render Jarek, you know, vulnerable, because if there's no queen, then somebody else is going to look to take over the throne.
See, that's a better explanation in the movie. They just threw that at you.
It was all there.
I was, okay, so fine.
Didn't you pay attention to the dialogue?
Yeah, I tried to, but like they threw everything at you so fast. And, okay, I'm like, I'm writing my notes, and okay, so this is what we're going to do. All right, so the good Evie could be killed, but Jarek won't do that because if he kills the good Evie, then the evil Evie dies as well. I was like, yeah, I'm fucking writing these notes. But so
we're here to do evil.
He then tells
anyway, listen, they barely go over any of this stuff in the movie. It is there, but like you know me, I'm literally overanalyzing everything for it because I'm just trying to find some semblance of of entertainment in this, because unlike you, I am a big fantasy fan, you know, and like, you know, I love things like Crow, you know, like I'll take a, it doesn't necessarily need to be a high quality movie to be entertaining. You know, I think the Barbarian Twins are a perfect example of that. You know, go and watch that movie, you know, for with the Paul brothers. Like, that is a film that is, you know, questionable in its overall quality.
Barbarian Twins is very questionable. I've seen that movie.
And yet, there is a lot of entertainment value, though, to be had in it. And I feel like that is really what this movie is missing. And, you know, doing a little bit of reading, like, on the film, you know, ultimately what it looks like is you have, you know, Wynorski coming in and taking a script that was originally written to be a more serious swords and sorcery movie and just kind of doing whatever he wanted to do with it because he wanted to make a comedy film.
And it's apparent in some of the scenes, but, you know, cutting back to Jarek, Sultana comes in and says that she wants to get, you know, revenge on Deathstalker. He says, no problem, we're going to get that. We then see Deathstalker and Good Evie riding through the hills and valleys to Jaffir while they're being spied on by Chin. Sultana later meets with Chin to find out where Deathstalker and Evie are. Chin thinks he can take out Stalker easily.
Oh, hot fucking chick.
Oh, Sultana's so fucking
chick.
And we get
so
to see,
fucking fine.
We get to see those
so
fucking
fun.
Tits later. Which is so
no,
great.
We don't.
I loved it.
No, we don't. Those are not hers, bro. You
that's not hers?
That? Come on.
Oh.
No.
Now I'm hurt. I thought those were hers.
You know what? We learned that shit in Eastbound and Down. Remember when we were like, oh, shit.
Oh,
yes. Finally, April.
With
tits.
Katie Mixon.
I guess they were not Katie Mixon's tits. You know how you know?
No,
they cut away. They cut her face out of the scene, and that's how you know they ain't that chick's tits.
I was kind of hoping that it was because she was so fucking smoking hot. I was like, we're finally getting to see her tits. Because, I mean, you get to see plenty of Evie. Monique Gabriel, who would later go on to do Hardcore Born, especially in 1998, she did a great fucking movie called Ravished, where she takes on a lot.
Look that up.
But you see with
her, when they first showed her boobs, I was like, oh, she's going to do the same thing, you know, because she's obviously a young, attractive actress. She looked a little more demure, you know what I mean? When there's that first scene where her shirt just opens up and you see like that one breast pop out, I'm like, oh, okay. But then we get to see full on. But again, you see her face with it. You see that it's her body.
Oh, yeah.
That scene with her, it's just the breasts. Like, it's just like all of a sudden, like, you know, the camera just so happens to only be a close up of a pair of tits.
Those strobes.
And you don't see whose tits those are.
Yeah,
I think almost like
the
Katie Mixon issue. Yes. I don't even think the skin tone is right.
Probably not.
I think they were like
probably doesn't
they
match.
Were really like tan, like spray tan almost too. You know what I mean? those are probably some Argentinians' tits. You know, nice pair of fake fucking round ones.
But so Sultana talking to Chin, she gets introduced to Chin's gang, crazy Otto Rheingold, the Mad Prussian, Ed the Head Szymanski, John the Baptist Bombasso, Nick the Crippler of Kashmir, and Buddy Footstool Rosa, who's a especially dangerous little brutal person. We then cut to the night where Chin and the boys shoot exploding arrows at Deathstalker and Evie. Jumping up the horse, they duck for cover and need to find a better way. Deathstalker
so
then begins to kill
like,
somebody.
All these assassins have, like, you know, regular real-world fucking, like, connotations and connections. Like, it's stupid,
oh,
you know what I mean? Like, they couldn't come up with something, like, more original that doesn't have, like, any kind of relation to our actual world.
No, not with the names. I started reading up the names. I was like, okay, that doesn't sound fantasy at all, but okay, let's go with it. Because you get introduced to them and then you get killed really quickly by Deathstalker. And once they realize that they're safe, they go on search for his horse. Chin returns to Sultana, who laughs about his gang being dead. Chin then throws some coins to a swamp to call Jarek to let him know the bad news. Jarek, seeing the other side of the liquid in this weird kind of cauldron that he has, decides to take a sword and kills Chin through the fucking water. Fine. That's cool. You know, that's how we are in fantasy movies. So Deathstalker and Evie arrive at a graveyard to rob some
bodies. I'm surprised we didn't get like a bad like 80s telephone company joke here, like reach out and touch someone. I think that was AT&T's fucking slogan at the time.
It was. It would have been better because it just kind of happens and you're like, okay, well, Chin's dead now. So Deathstalker and Evie arrive at a graveyard to rob some mausoleums because they're broke. Hearing a mausoleum door open, Deathstalker enters as the door shuts, separating him from Evie. Jarek appears in a mystic form in front of him to introduce himself, while zombies begin to arise from the graves outside. As Evie screams for help, Jarek bails real quick on the conversation and allows a wall covered in spikes to move towards Deathstalker. He's like, this isn't going to be a problem. Okay, maybe a problem. So, as the spikes advance towards Deathstalker, he decides to use these now elongated spikes to escape death through a grate in the roof of the mausoleum and joins Evie, where they manage to escape the undead. Back at the castle, evil Evie's hand suddenly disappears and reappears, so she calls for the guards to bring in a prisoner for her to feed on. I was like, kind of sexy, you know, where she's like, I'm not going to bite you. Like, you know, and she's like, oh, okay, no, totally dead. She feeds on this poor prisoner, you know, blood out of the sides of her mouth. Then we cut back to later on the road.
And then she sticks his face on the end of her bed, and you realize that there's a whole shit ton of faces that are making up the bullshit.
Yeah, all the faces that, yeah.
It's a little kid. I love that little kid fucking meme, dude, that little kid. Bullshit.
I was trying to think who he reminded me of. He reminded me of that fucking guy from Napoleon Dynamite, the fucking weird, Pedro character. Like, that was like little Pedro. So later on the road, Deathstalker and Evie follow the mountains to Jafir. But they're captured by Amazon women. The leader of the women thinks a lot like evil Evie, and this woman has raided our village. She's stolen our men. But then Evie says, well, my name is actually Rena. So the leader tells Evie that she can go, but Deathstalker has to stay to be put on trial by combat for his crimes of being a womanizer.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, Ghoul, you were so fucking on point about this character of Deathstalker, where he's just kind of like the funky neighbor. He's kind of like the Willie Ames of Charles in Charge. He's like, hey, Charles, what are we doing tonight? Like, he just has no fucking appeal of being a hero of any kind. Like, at least, like, I was trying to make the comparison of Big Trouble in Little China with Jack Burton. But at least Jack Burton, like, he had the size. Like, Kurt Russell had the size, but he was just kind of like the hapless hero. But, yeah, this guy playing Deathstalker is just kind of an average guy.
Kurt Russell has charisma. Kurt Russell has, like, a fucking it factor. You like watching Kurt Russell on fucking, you know, on screen. This guy, if you watch the original film, that guy literally has, like, fucking zero personality, zero charisma. Yeah. But you know what?
None.
That kind of works for this kind of character because, you know, he literally just wants to fucking rape, kill, and fuck. And that's it.
Yep.
Rape,
that's
kill, fuck. Doesn't even need to be in that order. Sometimes he'll kill and then rape and fuck. You know, but that's all that fucking guy wants. He wants money. He wants riches. You know, what was the line? You know, fucking he who gets the powers has the powers. I think that's what the fucking, like, what that whole first film was about. And what's this movie about? I don't know. I still don't fucking know.
Yeah.
There's no plot.
It's an hour and 14-minute movie. It just goes. That's the one good thing about this movie is that it fucking just goes. Like, there's no lagging. It's just kind of like, all right, oh, we're done already? Okay. That's what I really appreciate about it because it's like there's no story.
Not even John Lithgow could fucking save this movie, man. He gave such a subdued performance. Like, I was hoping just a little bit of fucking that Z-Man in there, you know? And, like, it just never hits. He never gets to that point. I do think at some point somebody uses the fucking line, fucking they call somebody a varlet. And I know that's a Z-Man fucking word, like, from fucking Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. So I know that was put in the script on purpose. I know Wynorski used him because he knows him from fucking, you know, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Why he couldn't get that kind of performance out of the actor, I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to fucking perform. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it. I don't know. I wanted that, though. It would have been the saving grace for me here. Because, God, I love Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. That's what it made me want to watch. It made me want to watch him in a better film.
Yeah, it would have been better. But so Deathstalker climbs into a ring where he's set to fight Gorgo. So if you want to kind of imagine what Gorgo looks like, just imagine a much fatter and more mean Fabulous Moolah, you know, to give you kind of a reference. Even though I know him from Glow, just like the ghoul does. He gets his ass kicked several times until he finally defeats Gorgo. But he doesn't want to kill her, even though it's a fight for death. He's like, I'm not doing that. So after the fight, Evie, a.k.a. Arena, comes clean about herself to Deathstalker, that she's a princess and that Jarrickman evil clone of her, but she escaped the castle. Deathstalker, real big man, decides to part ways with Arena. We cut back to the castle. Evil Evie throws a temper tantrum and wants Jarrick to find the good Evie finally. He invites her to his chamber where he shows her an elixir that will separate the two Evies. He wants to test a serum on two people he previously created that are also twins. It works as Evil Evie kills one of the twins. He then lets her drink this elixir as we cut back to the village where a party is happening. Evie searches for Deathstalker and finds him making out with the Amazon woman leader. The two enter her tent as an upset Evie leaves. Then the leader decides to go behind, you know, a couple curtains and undress and talk about how much he's looking forward to making love to Deathstalker. And she's like, and by tomorrow we'll be married. And he's like, gotta go. It kind of worked, kind of didn't. Again, like we talked about, these like kind of Jack Burton kind of comparisons where it's like, yeah, in a better fucking role, it would have worked, but it's like, yeah, it's all right. It's comedy. So later, we see Evie get caught in a trap. She gets brought to a camp where Sultana is waiting there for her. Sultana is prepared to torture Evie to find out where Deathstalker is, but she doesn't have to wait long as the hero arrives and fights off the enemies. Deathstalker manages to kill Sultana, but the rope holding Evie catches fire, but before she can fall to her death, she's saved by Deathstalker. So back at the castle, guards bring Sultana's body to Jarrick, and he manages to bring her back to life via a kiss, some strobe lights, and they presumably fuck as Evil Evie watches this and storms off. Again, this is what we're talking about earlier, folks, where it's like you kind of hope that that's Sultana's tits, but nope. I was hoping. I was hoping those big mommy milkers were hers, but they were not. So kind of heartbroken about that. Because she has done, you know, some softcore, you know, Tony Cable.
Yeah, ruined
played,
the dreams,
man. It did, but I mean, you know, she did a couple of softcore movies where she did kind of show off her goods, but I'm trying to picture if they're the same or not. But anyway, Evie and Deathstalker get separated at the castle. Guards surround Deathstalker as Jarrick appears and instructs the guards to kill him, but Sultana shows up and she wants to kill him. And Deathstalker's like, how the fuck are you alive? She's like, well, I am. So Evie is found outside by a few guards who use an arrow to knock her off her horse and then begin ripping off her clothes. They're ready to sexually assault her, but the Amazon women show up to kill the guards and save her from her assault. So, yeah, you know, Deathstalker 1, Deathstalker 2. Deathstalker, the first one, you definitely would have seen her get assaulted. This one, no, the Amazon women show up and save her from, you know, that, which apples and oranges between the two. So we eventually see Deathstalker is chained to a table where a deadly pendulum swings closer and closer to his body. Sultana says goodbye to him as he's saved by guards who bring in now the evil Evie. The two share a kiss before moving to the bed where they can get it on. And it's like, all right. I'm, again, a boy seeing this movie for the first time back in, you know, the late 90s. I'm having a good time. Even though you could definitely see that she's wearing a G-string, you know, when she's climbing on top of Deathstalker, I'm like, yeah, could have done without that. One of those things that you notice where you're like, yeah, they're obviously not doing anything.
Bro, I mean, you know? It's easy enough to move that floss right out of the way, man. I mean, just pull it to the side a little bit, and there you go.
Right? Like, it's just one of those things where I'm like, yeah, she could have done without it. I mean, if we're going to do softcore, let's do softcore. But, you know, obviously the actress wanted to wear the G-string for it. But she starts to growl, and just as she's about to kill Deathstalker, Evie arrives and knocks Evil Evie out with a statue. She then hands him back his sword as she leads him through the castle, where they enter a room filled with guards as well as Sultana and Jarek. The Amazon women also show up because Jarek's like, how are you going to kill us? There's two of you and 100 of us, but luckily the Amazon women show up, and a huge fight begins, where during the fight, Sultana decides, I'm getting the fuck out of here. You brought me back to life. Thank you, but I'm gone. Jarek's like, but wait a second. You know, you owe me. She's like, I don't owe you shit, bitch. And she's taken off. I was like, right move. That's
later.
The right move to make. It's the right move to make, and I'm right behind Sultana the entire time. So Deathstalker and Evie left the fight while Jarek tells evil Evie, who has awoken after being knocked out, to return to her chamber. Good Evie then goes in search of evil Evie while Deathstalker is after Jarek. Good Evie eventually finds evil Evie and then kills her with a knife to the gut, and then we get to see evil Evie melt into the floor.
Ew. Evil.
Which is the exact line that's delivered. And it's like, okay, great.
Oh.
And yeah. So Deathstalker eventually finds Jarek, and the two get into a sword fight. Jarek nearly manages to kill Deathstalker. Deathstalker breaks Jarek's blade and then manages to stab him through the neck, which kills him. Evil is vanquished. It's just a very lazy fight. You know, it's, you know, like we had talked about throughout this entire movie, it's a very lazy sword fight between Jarek and Deathstalker, and then it just ends with the sword being broken on Jarek's end and using that to kill him. It's okay gore. I mean, I'll give him that credit. You know, to see the knife, the broken sword go through Jarek's neck, I was like, not bad. You know, it could have been better, but, you know, we have evil finally being vanquished. We cut to the next day, where Evie is officially restored as the village princess. There's celebrations going on everywhere. Of course, Deathstalker is there and not sure what to do, but she asks him to present himself before her because I guess now he's like the prince, I guess. Or I don't know what Evie becomes now because like you never find out what happens to the king or queen. You just kind of know that she's the princess. So am I missing something, Ghoul? Because I didn't really get that. Where is the king and queen of this fucking village? They're
well,
just
I
never
think,
there.
You know, I think the idea is that she is going to be, she's the queen. That's really what it comes down to. You know, she's not simply just the, I don't think she's just the princess. I think she actually is the queen. Because we get, like, conflicted wording throughout the film. You know, sometimes they mention that she's a queen, like, you know, we hear that she's a queen and a seer, but then we also, yeah, you know, you get these princess lines at times too. I think that she is indeed the queen regent, and I think that makes, you know, similar to the end of, see, and again, this is him simply aping, you know, the end of a much better movie, which is Conan the Destroyer. You know, which ends with Conan and the princess, and it's, what's her name? It's Kevin Arnold's older sister from the Wonder Years. Olivia Diabo. And, you know, she's basically kind of throwing herself at him, saying, like, you know, Conan, baby, be my fucking king. You saved me, you saved my kingdom, blah, 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 blah. And Conan does what Conan does. He's like, fuck this, man. I'm going to go get my own kingdom. I don't need you, bitch. In here, we're getting that same thing, except no, Winarski's fucking joke is, well, he's going to accept it. He's going to be king, whatever, with her. I don't know, man. Like
and
I
he's
said,
gonna give her a big old kiss, and you know,
yes,
that's
he
how,
is.
You know. The funny thing is that I have never, I've never seen any of the Star Wars movies to completion, but I have seen scenes, and for some reason, I kept thinking about the one Star Wars movie where they all get fucking medals and shit, where it's like, yeah,
no,
you did
be,
it.
That would be the end of the original film.
Okay, because I kept thinking about that one. I'm like, wasn't there a Star Wars movie where they're just like, here's some medals, and they're like, yeah, and they're all standing up before people? And I was like, that's what this ending made me feel like, where I was like, oh, remember when the fucking dog thing got a fucking medal? And he's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I don't know what the character's name is.
Chewie didn't get a medal. Chewie didn't get a medal, and that was the problem.
Chewie didn't get a medal? Why didn't he get a medal? That's kind of fucked up. Because they all did. I thought he did too. I don't know. I guess he's a dog. I don't know. It made me think about that ending of that movie because I've seen clips of it and I was like, yeah, it's kind of like everybody gets a medal. Everybody's fucking cool, you know. But
he's a mog.
Know, yeah.
Part man, part
dog. In a perfect world. I mean, in a perfect world, Deathstalker 2 would have ended that way, like you had said, Ghoul, where he's just like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I don't want to be a king. I don't want to rule a kingdom. I want to make my own fucking way in the world. And he would have been out the door. But no, this little fucking Roy Ames character is like, cool, great. You know, by the way, the Amazon princess that wanted to fuck me is with me too, for some reason. She still has a chance, but she wants a kid. I don't want that either. Like, it's such a fucking mishmash of shit. But, ultimately, I had fun with Deathstalker, too. I think it's just one of those movies that you can just put on. It's a quick fucking watch. And as being a fan, not a fan of fantasy movies, sword and sorcery movies, fun. You know, it's a good escape, you know. I like the first one, but I think Deathstalker 2, having Jim Wynorski there, who just knows what we want to see, is so much better. But that being said, Dean, next week, it's your film pick of the week. What are we talking about?
It is my film pick of the week. Once again, the time has come for me to pick a choice. And I was, let me just do one quick look, because there was something I really wanted to do, but I didn't feel like it was available, but I'm just typing it in right now.
We have the time.
You know, we do have the time. We're not pressed for time, and you're still awake and with us. And
I am. Hello. Yes, I'm awake. I'm fabulous. I'm sexy.
Yeah,
indeed.
I don't know if this one is gonna work, man. Let me check one more thing here. It just doesn't seem to be available anywhere. I don't want to say the title in case I can find it one day. I want it to be a surprise. But when I heard about it recently, I was like, oh man, this is gonna be this will be fun. Let's see. Checking one more thing here. Thank you for your patience.
Something. We're brewing. We're coming up with something. Hold with us.
All right. All right. So this one, what I was thinking wasn't going to work for this week. And then let me check one more thing here. There was something that I knew I wanted to do. And last I had added it to my list. It was available. I just want to double check that it is. Talk amongst yourselves for just a moment, please.
We got you.
Indeed.
We got
indeed.
You.
So, King, I got
fine.
A question. Where, if I may ask you, do you know of that I might possibly find the movie Ravished? I'd love to see it.
Go to xvideos.com.
Oh, very cool. Thank you. You know, it's funny. I'm looking through her filmography, and I see she was actually in you know, it's an early 90s film. It's like one of those that's like a guilty pleasure for me. It's a Dean Cavern film with Amy Dolan's in it called Miracle Beach, where Amy Dolan's is like
one.
A genie.
Yep.
The one that where he's just a genie that he finds and all that shit. God, man, that girl was so cute when she was fucking young.
Oh. Yeah, no, if you go to xvideos.com and type in Monique Gabriel, all her softcore and hardcore shows up there. Including a great episode of Nightcap that she did back in the early 2000s, I should say, where she was just kind of doing the softcore. But yeah, Ravished, and there's another one that she did. She did a solo episode with another guy that's on there. It's a quick clip, but yeah. And if you want to see her get railed, there you go. You know, and she definitely does, you know. She quit acting in 2002, you know, but... You know, her movies are there. And even Tony Naples, who played Sultana, she did a couple softcore movies back in the 90s, like Prison Heat. So she has a couple softcore titles underneath her belt to check out. You know, I don't know if the clips are on X videos, but I do know that I've seen a couple of them. And I follow her on Instagram. Yeah, so, yes, we're back.
All right. We're back. Thank you for the...
figure it out.
Patience. I did. We're going back a little bit. We're going back to the 70s.
Hey, all right. Third decade.
1975, to be precise. And we are once again taking a trip to the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1975, we will be watching Wolf Guy, starring Sonny Chiba.
Oh, a Sonny Chiba movie. Very nice.
Wolf
okay.
Guy,
yeah.
1975.
Rest in peace, Sonny Chiba. So, yeah. Enrage Lycanthrope.
If you have a library card, there is a free streaming service called Canopy where you can watch it for free if you have a library card. It's like a virtual library site. They have a really good, actually pretty good collection of films on there. So that is one place to watch it. And then, you know, there's other places to watch it as well. But that is what we will be watching for the next episode of our show.
All right. Very cool. So we're going to be watching Wolf Guy from 1975, starring the late, great Sonny Chiba. Looking forward to it. You know, let's do this. All right. So that's a great one for next week. You know, I seen Wolf Guy many years ago because Arrow released it on Blu-ray. And they were making a big announcement about it because it was kind of like a big deal. And I remember watching a copy of it and enjoying it. So it'll be a revisit, but I'm looking forward to checking it out either way. Wolf Guy, 75. So, all right, Dean, thank you so much for joining us for the show for tonight's pick from the Ghoul, Death Soccer 2. We'll see you back
next
week.
My pleasure. And now that you say that, I just learned in looking where things are available, I don't know what the cost of it is. I do see they have a free trial, but I don't see the price. But Arrow, like everything else in the universe, has its very own streaming service.
They do.
So, anyway,
so there are ways to watch Wolf Guy.
You can see it there, too. But Wolf Guy next week. Thank you very much. I will see you all next week.
Can't wait. You know me, the 70s are my wheelhouse when it comes to cinema, so I'm looking forward to traveling back to 1975 to talk about that. But all right, cool. Thank you so much for the pick of Deathstalker 2. Why don't you go ahead and sign yourself off?
I'm sorry, everybody. Stay scared.
Oh.
No apologies.
Sorry.
No
apologies.
I'm just kidding. You know I don't give a fuck. Listen, in the end, I had fun watching these two movies. I enjoy talking to you guys about them. You know, am I going to revisit either of these films? You know, I actually might revisit the first one. But I will never watch the sequel again, and I will probably never, ever, ever seek out the third or fourth film. Because, yes, this series did get another two movies.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, they didn't stop. They made two more. Yeah, no, they didn't know when good enough to be left alone. So, unfortunately, they did make two more that are unwatchable. Like, if you did not have a good time watching Deathstalker 2, I could definitely say don't watch the other two, because I did. Because, like I said, Deathstalker 2 kind of got me. I enjoyed it, because I'm not a huge fan of sword and sorcery movies, but nope, not good. But anyway, Ghoul, why don't you go ahead and send yourself off?
I did already, bro. Are you stoned?
No, I'm not stoned. I didn't hear you. That was the problem, because I was looking up Wolf Guy shit.
Anyway, I'm kidding. Don't get mad.
I was looking up Wolf Guy shit. I apologize. I was like, I'm excited because I love 70s cinema, so looking forward to it. But either way, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show. Hail Satan. Hail yourselves. Hail Odorous. Keep America strong. Watch horror movies. We'll see you back here next week for the Dean Film Pick of the Week, Wolf Guy.